There are three teams that will decide the fate of the Texans this year. Those three are the Atlanta Falcons, the Carolina Panthers, and the Denver Broncos. And I will tell you why. All three of those games are going to be at home. They're all winnable, and they're all teams that are coming off disappointing seasons. If they keep on disappointing, the Texans' path to the playoffs is much easier. Does that sound reasonable to you guys?
Well, I mean, thinking.
I'll tell you why. I'll expand on this thought. Because you look at this schedule, and we know how tough a lot of these games are going to be. At the Saints, at the Chargers, at the Chiefs, at Indianapolis, home for the Colts, home for New England. Those are all going to be really tough games. These are the swing games. These are the games that take you from 7-9
are
to 10-6.
Are they swing games?
I would prefer my swing games to be like the Buffalo Bills, like the dregs of the Arizona Cardinals, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How do teams that were 500 teams last year being the swing games making me feel better about the other teams potentially being brutal death marches?
Well, you can feel however you want about the second thing, but what I'm saying is that Carolina Atlanta, they're going into the season with playoff hopes, possibly expectations. They underachieved last season, but these teams have had a lot of success in the past.
My question is, in response to that, I was trying to process it. Do you feel like those are 50-50 games, those three home games?
Yes.
Okay.
Except for Denver right now. I'm just worried about the possibility that under Vic Fangio and Joe Flacco that Denver gets a little bit better.
Right.
Let me continue with this to have this make sense. If the Texans are going to beat Carolina, Atlanta, and Denver at home, then this team is not going to be way worse than 9-7. Because you look at all these other teams they play, there are enough wins on this schedule between Oakland, between Tampa, two Tennessee games to end the season. They have enough winnable games that if they're going to win these three games at home against these three football teams, they should be in very good shape.
But they still have all those other potentially really hard games, too. Like, yes. I don't know, I admire what you're doing here, but what you're trying to do is talk your way out of a mathematical fact, which is that they're facing a lot of teams that were good teams last year. And even the other than the couple of dregs on the team, you've got a whole bunch of either average to above average teams, which makes for a hard schedule. So, like, there's nothing, for one, that can change. Obviously, and especially some of these good quarterbacks are old quarterbacks who are more likely to get injured or start to trail off or fall off. It's still just a really hard schedule anyway around it, unless some other things roll your way.
Well, I'm not disputing that part. I agree with that part. I've said all morning it's a very tough schedule. I agree.
What's so acceptable for those three games against the Panthers?
You got to win at least two
against the Broncos. Okay.
You have to win at least two. You have to. If they don't win at least two of those games, they got to start beating the Pats and the Colts a couple times. They got to start beating the Saints and the Chargers on the road. If they're not winning at least two of those games, they got to start winning the kind of games that this franchise has not won very often.
Because if you win two of those three games, then the other games that you feel like you should win, like that's a dicey situation. Because even if you're a good team, you're going to lose a game or two that you should win. But you've got the Broncos, a couple versus the Titans. That brings you up to 5 wins. The Bucs, that gets you up to 6 wins.
Oakland.
7, maybe? Okay, I'm not counting out Oakland as much as other people. So you're telling me to feel good about the potential of being 7-9. But then also, maybe if you pull off a few of those other ones, you know what that would mean? That would mean you're a really good team. Like, right now, you're not predicting that they're going to be a really good team, though. If you're saying they're going to be 8-8, you think they're going to be about an average team.
I say 8-8, and you guys said 7-9.
Yeah.
Yes.
I get where Mike's going, though, because, I mean, if they lose those three games, I'm looking at them, Seth, and I'm thinking those are gimmies. I mean, the Panthers and Falcons definitely, the Falcons and Broncos definitely. Carolina, I don't know. I don't know what Cam Newton is right now. But I think, like, those are games that they should win. If you were to just basically put them in, because it's a home game and you're going up against teams that I think are largely not that talented.
You're going against Julio Jones.
That's true.
I mean, that's like Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. The Texans versus a good quarterback paired with a good receiver
is above average to average.
Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Thursday. I think there are three teams that will decide the Texans' fate at least a week before the draft, looking at this new schedule: Carolina, Atlanta, and Denver, because these are all teams that I think could wave up and down based on their coaching and their quarterback play.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I guess, are people really sleeping on the Falcons just because they were disappointing last year compared to what the expectations were? I mean, it wasn't. I feel like they're a 500 they're a 500 team, but with a good quarterback and a good result. Like, it's not a gimme win by any stretch of the imagination.
I have no respect for Dan Quinn. I think he's a horrible coach.
Okay.
Horrible coach.
Yeah, I think he's terrible. They should have gotten rid of him.
They did go to the Super Bowl, though.
Yeah, that was not because of him. That was because of Kyle Shanahan.
These are two teams, Carolina and Atlanta, that have been to Super Bowls recently. Obviously, Denver has won one, so that kind of goes to my point also. These are teams that, in recent memory, have had success.
I get what you're saying.
Denver's the biggest difference because at that time they had Peyton and a
phenomenal defense. Of quarterbacks since then. Well, the Falcons and the Panthers have had the same guys.
Last time the Texans, as Black Greg points out, last time the Texans placed the Falcons, that was a low point in franchise history.
Yes, it was.
That was right around the Falcons game, the Dolphins game. Remember some people went... Which games were the three games that were atrocious? That it was that people went to the Dolphins game and the Falcons game, right? Were
it was they
back
to back?
Like some people took a road trip. Like some Texans fans made like this grand trip. Like, hey, we're gonna go to South Beach and we're gonna go to Atlanta. It's gonna be a blast, right?
It was not back to back. It was separated by a week or two.
Okay,
but both were utter bloodbaths, and they led to just a lot of people being angry, as they should have, because they were both utter disasters. What was not a disaster, and what has not been so far, is the Rockets against the Utah Jazz. Seth and Paul on a Thursday.
It was the Jaguars and the Dolphins. They went to the Jaguars game, and they won that one, and then they went down to the Dolphins game where it was in
debacle.
That rainstorm, and it just seemed like it washed all the Texans' manliness off the field.
It brought Lamar Miller to Houston, though.
It did.
That's right. Bill O'Brien was so impressed by Lamar Miller.
He was great.
Inaccurately remembering that he had run for like 70 yards more than he actually did.
That was actually Chris Polk, but still.
Oh, is that Chris Polk?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I think Bob McNair was very excited about the game that Lamar Miller had against the Miami Dolphins when he was asked about it a little bit later.
He was. Rockets crushed the Jazz again last night. 118-98, James Harden had a triple-double. He led all scorers with 32 points and said this after last night's Game 2 win.
They have a different kind of swag at home, though. Our swag, our confidence is where it needs to be. We just need to bring that to the road. And we all know how tough it is to win in Utah, but we've done it last year. And I think we're focused and we're on another level to where defensively we're engaged, you know. And, I mean, they didn't shoot the ball well from three tonight, but they'll make some of those at home.
That was James Harden last night. All right, this series is 2-0. Barring some sort of major injury or major collapse, they've got this series. It's a matter of when and not if. How are we going to judge James Harden in the playoffs? We've established on this show, on our show between all of us, that James Harden has the most pressure on him than any athlete in this city by far. How will we judge his performance other than the obvious, which is winning?
It's 100% wins and losses at this point. That's all. No. It's the obvious one is the winning, because when James Harden doesn't have a great statistical game, it's because teams focus all of their pressure on him. So the only way that he can show his worth against really good teams is by the team winning. Because people do the same thing with Steph Curry. They'll point to his performances in the finals. They'll point at box scores and act like Steph Curry was a non-factor. Iguodala ends up winning MVPs instead of Steph Curry, even though Steph Curry was the guy that provided all those opportunities for Iguodala. The same thing's going to happen to James Harden. At this point, James Harden's legacy will be completely about whether he wins a championship or championships, how he plays versus the Golden State Warriors this year, and that's all it comes down to. If James Harden never scores more than 25 points in a series against the Warriors, but they beat the Warriors, I will credit James Harden 100% for all of that.
But I don't think people nationally will. I think for us, it's a visual thing. Is James Harden going to look gassed at the end of games against Golden State when they're throwing defender after defender at him? Is James Harden going to be efficient against Golden State? Is he going to look checked out? It's all visuals for me, because I understand that if they win this series, we're thinking about James Harden a lot differently, and especially from a national perspective, I think people actually might finally give him the respect that he's due as one of the best players in the league. But I think locally, we're always going to be a little frustrated with him unless we actually look at him in a playoff series against a team like Golden State, and for the entirety of it, not just the first two games, which we've seen from him in the past, he looks like the MVP of basketball.
I think we've seen steady growth out of him in terms of how he performs in late game situations in the playoffs. You go from about a couple years ago where some of the late game passes that were really curious and weird, some of the turnovers at some points. I think a lot of that has been worked out of his game, and now he genuinely this season has a really good feel for when to take control of the game himself, when to let other people have it, when to make it an ISO game, when not to. And look, you saw Charles Barkley at halftime last night. You know, kind of almost matter-of-factly say that he's just the greatest scorer he's seen in this modern era of the NBA.
For this era.
For this era, when the rules are what they are and what you're allowed to do, what you can do, that he's just never seen anything like it. I think he gets more respect from basketball people than he does from national media. And that's why the players voted him the MVP.
So let's say they don't beat the Warriors. You don't think there's any way that he can get any credit? Let's say he plays really well and they lose in seven.
He can't get any more credit than he already has.
Than he already has.
Yeah, I don't. Are we really acting like people around the NBA don't respect James Harden? Like,
let
me tell you something.
National media. Yeah, no.
Hey, you know what? Hey, do people respect Kobe Bryant?
Of course.
Of course they do. But you know what also happens? People despise Kobe Bryant. They hate him.
But
there's no way James Harden won't be hated. He'll always be hated by some
people. I'm not talking
about
that. I'm talking more about the narrative around Harden choking or collapsing or whatever in the playoffs. That specific part.
Do you see that from actual knowledgeable NBA people, that he chokes in the playoffs?
I mean, I guess knowledgeable. Well,
enough influencers of opinion say things like that to make people that don't maybe follow basketball as much think that way.
Yeah, I guess, but it's fair to say he doesn't have a signature. He doesn't have signature playoff moments because, since they've been relevant, it's all been about the Golden State Warriors.
Well, his signature playoff moment did not come in a Rockets uniform.
His signature playoff moment was being on the bench in the Clippers comeback.
It was
San Antonio Game 6. I would say that.
I think against the Heat in the finals, too, yes. In 2012, where he
was
awful.
On the positive side, his signature playoff moment would be he was the guy who took over against San Antonio in the Western Conference Finals in 2012, and he was one of the main reasons why Oklahoma City won the Western Conference that year. That is James' biggest accomplishment.
But it was so long ago,
It was a long time ago, yes.
And he was sixth man still.